Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast.
Nope, we're all nope, about cinematic nope, connections. Nope. Absolutely not. Full bloom right off the bat. Oh my god.
All right, let's start again. But I'm going to leave this all in. Hello, Mr. Gump. And welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast, where all about cinematic connections. Each week, we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. I'm Zach Brooks, and for the 166th time, I'm joined by...
Brendan Fitzpatrick, and I gotta pee, Zach. Hang on.
I did think about starting with that, since that's usually my MO. Last week, we talked about The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, and this week, due to another life story through history written by Eric Roth, or co-written by Eric Roth, we will be discussing 1994's Forrest Gump, directed by...
Forrest Gump.
I love the way they say that, his name sometimes. Directed by Robert Zemeckis, starring my man Tom Hanks and Robin Wright. And Gary Sinise.
Gary Sinise, Michael T. Williamson, Sally Field, the great Sally Field. Yeah.
Yep.
A veritable who's who of cast in this one.
Lots of archival footage of presidents and other
lots of historic figures.
So we will be discussing Forrest Gump. Then at the end of the episode, we'll decide on our next movie based on suggestions sent in by our listeners and the ones that we brought as your hosts. So we'll be spoiling Forrest Gump if you've never seen it. Kind of crazy if you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost 30 years old now. But it's on Netflix until the end of March. So you can watch it there, and then I'm sure it'll just move to some other streaming service. Or if you just want to skip ahead, here we're going to be watching next week. Timestamp is in the description of this podcast, although we always suggest that you pause the podcast, go watch the movie, and come back and listen to our discussion. And as always, submit your feedback to us on your feedback, ratings, questions, comments, at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram, themovieladder@gmail.com, and the Movie Ladder on Letterboxd. Brendan, I already forgot to do my new catchphrase to start the podcast.
I forgot you even had a new catchphrase to start the podcast. So
we'll do this intro one more time.
We got problems.
Yeah. Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast, where we climb the rungs of cinematic connections.
There you go.
Yeah. Off to a roaring start for this Forrest Gump episode for Oscars week.
Welcome to Oscar week. Oscars are only 6 days away. Getting really excited. Just solidified my Oscar plans for what I'm doing Oscar night. What about you? Going over to our friend Jacob and Adrian's, going to have some wine and charcuterie and watch the Oscar results.
Nice. And who's your pick to win Best Picture?
I wrote The Fablemans, but I really do think at this point it's going to be everywhere all at once.
Yeah. I have some bets with high odds on The Fablemans to win. I might double down on that just in case.
Yeah.
But it feels like there's no steam towards The Fablemans. Like nobody's talking about
that. That's the thing is I think it's going to be high on everyone's ballots. This is the thing with preferential balloting. And I can't remember if we talked about
this. Are you going to Gump explain some preferential balloting to me?
I am. Ballots are as ballots do,
yeah.
Mr. Brooks. They're going to, I think it'll be really, really high on a lot of people's lists and not low on anyone's list.
Mm.
And so that could jump it ahead of something like Everything Everywhere All at Once that maybe not everyone saw, even if they have it higher on their lists. You know what I mean?
I hope all the Oscar voters saw Everything.
Because that totally happens, right?
I know. In my perfect world. So
in the perfect world.
Yes. Nice. All right. Well, Brendan, what's the best thing you saw this week? Maybe it was an Oscar movie.
It's really tough. I have not watched a lot of really good stuff this week, unfortunately. Watched some really bad movies. I would probably say the best thing I watched this
week.
The least bad thing I watched this week was the film I watched for Criterion.
Nice.
Sunday night, I watched the 1936 film My Man Godfrey, starring William Powell and Carol Lombard. This movie was really a lot of fun. I didn't really know what to expect going into it. This movie was sort of one of those both romantic comedies of the era, but also a morality tale, as it tackled issues of class and rich man, poor man, and love across, you know, economic spectrum, and how do we treat people that we see as below us? So a lot of like that era morality tale, as far as, you know, the way Godfrey gets inserted into this very rich family after, you know, being picked up on the streets by one of the daughters of this family, and they hire him as a butler, and then he starts inserting himself more into the family and becomes this mysterious figure that everyone's trying to figure out where he came from and what his deal is. And it's a very, very zippy 100-minute film. I really enjoyed it. Definitely recommend people check it out. Really great performances. I think it holds up. William Powell and Carol Lombard are the two stars. Yeah.
Nice.
So that's the last thing I watched this week.
Cool. Other than Mando, I'm assuming.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, I'm going to talk about Mando at the end anyway when I do my plugs.
And you already talked about Mando.
And I already talked about Mando, you know, speaking of plugs.
We need to talk about Mando. All right. For me, let's see, my week was consumed by Oscar movies and Creed movies. So I'm going to say the best thing I watched this week is Creed, the first Creed, not the second.
First Creed, nice.
Yes. And I'd seen it once before and I liked it, and it was such a good, such a strong, good revisit. I had not seen it probably since like a year or two. I don't think I saw it in the theaters, but I think I saw it shortly after it came out. Mm-hmm. But just, I really love all the choices that Ryan Coogler makes in this. And it just, like, he does such a good job of making something that feels fresh. It, you know, as one of these like reboots of a franchise, it does not suffer from just being another Rocky movie. It has Rocky, but it really does a good job building up Creed as its own character. And the relationship between Rocky and Creed is some of the strongest stuff, especially as somebody who's, you know, caring for a family member who is going through cancer right now. Yep. The stuff with Rocky and, you know, in Creed and Adonis Creed taking care of him. Mm-hmm. It was really, really touching to me. And actually, that's, you know, as we get into Forrest Gump, that's something I'll talk about a little bit too, is some of the like dealing with sick family members and helping sick family members really resonated with me right now. And so, I just think like the fight scenes are interesting. Like, I do think like with boxing movies, sometimes boxing fights can just be kind of like samey. And I think the way that they're filmed is so good. And all of this is reinforced so much after I watched Creed 2, and Creed 2 was such a step down, and it was no longer Ryan Coogler doing it. Yeah. I've not yet seen Creed 3, maybe this weekend.
Yeah, so it's on my watch list.
Yeah, so I just like it, that like reinforced how good Creed was and how much I liked it.
Yeah, and we should talk about, I mean, you know, we should mention that the backbone of those movies is really the Michael B. Jordan performance as Adonis Creed. I mean, without him in the titular role, I don't think those movies are nearly as good as they are. He's just such a captivating and fantastic actor. Like, you can't take your eyes off of him whenever he's on the screen in anything.
And I think that Jonathan Majors is going to be, I'm really excited to see what he does opposite Jonathan Majors, and also what Michael B. Jordan does behind the camera in Creed 3. It's kind of like when Scream came out. Was it last year that the new Scream came out, or 2 years ago? And I watched all the Scream movies in preparation for the new Scream coming out. And then I didn't go see the new Scream in theaters. And I'm like, oh, am I going to do that again with Creed, where I watched both Creed movies and then didn't get around to actually going to the new one?
Yeah, I waited for that one to come to streaming. I did enjoy that latest Scream that they dropped last year.
I did.
It was really good. It was fun. I'm really excited for Creed 3. I think it's going to be really good. I'll probably try to check it out this weekend.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll just go back to my joke that I always say is I wish that Creed 2 was titled Creed 2 Bruise Control. I think that just really missed opportunity there.
Missed opportunity. Yep.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, anything else before we get into Forrest Gump?
Let's gump it up.
All right. So obviously this is a rewatch for both of us. I mean, I don't know how many times I've seen this movie. A handful of times.
Yeah, it's a handful, if not a dozen, you know. Yeah.
Stars my favorite actor and is made by the director of my favorite movie, Back to the Future. So, you know, right up my alley for this one. So we'll see if it nailed it based on the people that are involved. Mm-hmm. Why don't we start off with just, I mean, everybody knows the story of Forrest Gump. It's about a man who named Forrest Gump. He's a simple man, and he, you know, low IQ, developmentally disabled, developmentally slow, going through history. And where he's telling his story, and then we kind of see some bookend stuff before and after. Mm-hmm. why don't we start with the box office, which we're trying to do at the beginning to see if this fits a little bit better.
We should mention, based on the book by Winston Groom.
Winston Groom, yes.
Which there is a – I was going to save this for my one thing more, but I think I'm going to say
one
here.
One last thing. Your one first thing. Here we go.
There is a sequel that basically he wrote after the success of this movie called Gump and Company that has been in developmental hell for over 20 years now. Or, 15 years. Yeah. That they can't seem to get made. And there's been a lot of legal back and forth regarding the sequel.
Yeah. Maybe they would do that as like a series at this point. Like a Netflix series.
Well, that's going to be one of my hot takes about this movie, is that I feel like this movie would actually have made a really, really great prestige TV series.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, Gump
and Co.
Why
don't we get into the box office? Sorry.
Yeah, Gump and Co. Did you ever read Gump and Co?
Yeah, actually, so this is fun. After Forrest Gump, I have distinct memories of the summer of, it was either the summer of 95 or 96 after Gump came out, they released the cassette audiobook of Gump and Company. And I was on a trip in Pennsylvania visiting my aunt and uncle, and we picked up Gump and Company for the road trip. And we spent the entire road trip listening to Gump and Company back and forth, running around Pennsylvania, seeing different family members. So I have a really like distinct sense memory of listening to and enjoying Gump and Company.
I like that you use the full name, that you say Gump and Company and not Gump and Co. Very good.
Well, that was the way, I can't remember who narrated it. I would have to look it up, but that's what they say in the narration. It's Gump and Company.
Oh, interesting. I always Winston called it Gump
Groom.
And Co.
Yeah, Gump and Company by Winston Groom. Nice.
I read the book as well. I don't remember much about it, except I think that he invents New Coke.
He joins the space program and he goes to the Iraq war. And he also adopts a monkey.
Okay, nice.
Adopts a monkey, gets re-enlisted to go to Iraq with Lieutenant Dan. It's wild.
Yeah. So this book was published in 95, but I don't see the release date of the audiobook.
So it probably would have been the summer of 96.
So, all right. Now we're getting to the box office. So Forrest Gump, I'm not sure the last movie we did that opened at number one since we've been doing this. I'm sure Top Gun Maverick probably did, but I know it did. I don't know about any other movies we've done this year, but Forrest Gump did open at number one that year, displacing The Lion King.
Yeah, Lion King and Speed had both been one and two at the box office for a few weeks leading up to the release of this movie, and Forrest Gump came along and narrowly beat out Lion King for number one on its opening weekend.
Yeah.
Pretty wild.
This does, Box Office Mojo does say that this had been out for 2 weeks, but it must have been like very limited release.
It was a midweek release. Like it was released on July the 6th.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't count for the week before, and it only counted for the 7th. So Box Office Mojo has it structured weird where it's like one day off of counting for,
And I always think of this movie as being their holiday release. I'm kind of surprised that this is a summer release, although it does make sense July 4th, just like with how much patriotic stuff is in this.
And especially it's a Tom Hanks movie, you know, it's going to do big business. Here's the thing. Here's why I always remember it being a summer movie, Zach. I can tell you exactly where I was when I saw this movie in the summer of 1994.
Were you in the theater?
I was in the theater. I was in Norfolk, Virginia with my mom, and we were having a follow-up visit with a doctor I was seeing up there having to do with all my facial reconstructive surgeries. And my mom was like, you know, we're not leaving till tomorrow. Why don't we go to the movies? What do you want to see? And I was like, can we just go see this Tom Hanks movie, Forrest Gump? She was like, sure. And so we went to this like little three screen theater on the outskirts of Norfolk. And I asked her last night when I talked to her after Jeopardy and was like, do you have any memory of going to see this movie with me? And she was like, no, I don't. And I was like, that's really weird because it's one of the standout, like
distinct memories of
it. I have a distinct memory of where and when I saw this. And like, how meaningful it was for me, because I mean, this is a movie that is all about the relationship a mom has with a son who is different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for me to be sitting there watching this movie with my mom, you know, growing up being told how different I was, mm-hmm, and being treated differently, mm-hmm, and bullied like Forrest is in this film, like, this movie just hits for me, especially seeing it as a 14-year-old, you know, dealing with everything I dealt with in my, you know, in my young life up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
I fucking love this movie.
Oh, good. Yeah.
It's, I absolutely fucking love this movie. Mm-hmm. And I, this movie holds a very, very special place in my heart for that reason.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah. I do not have a distinct memory of when I watched this movie. Definitely not, mm-hmm, like you do. I do have distinct memories of watching That Thing You Do and Castaway as, yeah, other, like, around that, you know, that decade of Tom Hanks movies, but not this one. Other movies in the theater, not to pivot, mm-hmm, away from your story, just, no, you're to kind of close this out. So Schindler's List was still in the theater. Mm-hmm. It was in its 31st week of release, but pretty low down on the box office.
Yeah.
And then in the top 10, we still had, we had the Flintstones, Baby's Day Out. I Love Trouble, which I know has come up a couple times on this podcast. Oh, yes,
that's the Nick Nolte, Julia Roberts, and she's a reporter. Is that what it is? Yep. Yeah.
Blown Away was number four.
Loved Blown Away. The Bridges.
Yep. And
Baby movie.
And Forrest Whitaker was in Blown Away.
Yeah. A lot of people in Blown Away.
Maybe we do Blown Away next week, and we do, you know, the Forest of Summer 94 connection.
Was that Tommy Lee Jones? Was the bad guy in Blown Away?
I think so. Yeah, that sounds right.
Sounds right.
And twin movie with Blown Away, a movie we already covered on this podcast, Speed, was number three.
Yes.
As you mentioned. So Speed and Blown Away, both in the theater at the same
time. Incredible. What a summer. What a summer to be alive. Lion King, like one of the biggest Disney movies of all time, was still rocking and rolling in the summer of 94.
Right. I just looked up Oklahoma City Bomb movies in 95 because I was like, it's weird to have all of these bomb movies, you know, right? But the Oklahoma City Bomb had not yet happened. All right. Do we want to talk Oscars too, or do we want to get into the movie and then talk Oscars?
Do we want to talk Oscars? Here's the thing. If you had to guess, who from this cast do you recall getting nominated or think got nominated?
I mean, I'm sure because Tom Hanks did.
I can tell you after last night.
He won. Yeah.
Yeah. Hanks won because it was back-to-back with Philadelphia, right?
Right. Yep.
Philadelphia the year before, Gump this year. We have three other people I think probably should have been nominated for this film they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Robin Wright.
Mm-hmm.
Sally Field, who I believe was nominated for Best Supporting Actress for this film. You can tell me if I'm wrong. And Gary Sinise for Best Supporting Actor.
Sally Field was not nominated.
Wow. Incredible.
And Robin Wright was not nominated as well, but Gary Sinise was. So Gary Sinise and Tom Hanks were the two.
And Gary Sinise lost, right?
Yes. To Martin Landau for Ed Wood.
Ooh, actually, that's not bad. That's not bad. I could accept that. He's really... But what I will say is that this is Gary Sinise's movie for a solid hour. He just comes walking into this movie and absolutely takes it over for the middle hour of this movie, mm-hmm, as Lieutenant Dan Taylor, at least in my opinion. Like, you cannot, like, you're so happy he's there, and you're so captivated by him and his character. I absolutely was blown away by Gary Sinise on this one.
Well, and what I picked up on this one, because it's been a long time since, mm-hmm, I watched this movie, is that, you know, the thesis statement of this movie is said towards the end, which is like, you know, in life, do we have a destiny? Does everybody, mm-hmm, have some path that they follow? Or are we this feather that's just blowing in the wind? Right. Mm-hmm. And I remember the iconic image of the feather blowing that starts and ends the movie, but, you know, didn't really put it together kind of thematically like I did on this watch, where, you know, that's really like, is Forrest Gump, you know, he follows this path and kind of throughout the movie, one thing leads to the next, right?
Yep.
He's running from the bullies and he ends up running onto the football field in Alabama. And then he's, mm-hmm, he graduates from Alabama and he gets taken, you know, enlists in the army, and then he enlists in the army and he meets Bubba and he starts the shrimp, like each year he plays ping pong and starts the shrimp. And each thing kind of is like sequential, almost like a Rube Goldberg machine where like one thing leads to another. So it's like, is he just this ping pong ball that's just kind of bouncing aimlessly, Or is he following some destiny, which is what Lieutenant Dan says. Lieutenant Dan says, my destiny was to die on the battlefield, and you screwed up the destiny. You interfered.
Yeah. It's kind of like a sliding doors moment. Like, you got in the way of the timeline. You messed up the timeline.
Right, Marty. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
You messed up the timeline, Marty. I was supposed to die, you know.
That's actually a really good connection back to Back to the Future, right? Yeah. Or Back to the Future 2, maybe. Well, both, I guess. One other thing about the Oscars, so yes, Tom Hanks did win. He won over Paul Newman in Nobody's Fool. And what's interesting about that is that Paul Newman played a character named Sully. Donald Sully Sullivan.
Incredible. So,
yeah.
All right. Are we doing Nobody's Fool next week?
Yeah, maybe. And I think the biggest thing with the Oscars, you know, as we are in Oscar week, you know, it's a good one to do, is like, this is one of the, like this along with Crash, and I feel like there's, you know, maybe Green Book as well, like these movies that are kind of like held up as sort of like cheesy and disliked, and film Twitter always points to as like, this movie shouldn't have won, this movie should have won. So like the movie with like Forrest Gump, what everybody except Olin says is that Pulp Fiction should have won over Forrest Gump.
But here's the thing is I think that's not a fair comparison, because this movie is leaps and bounds better than Crash. And I can tell you without seeing Green Book that this movie blows Green Book out of
it. It's much better than Green Book, yes.
So that is I understand people love Tarantino and people love Pulp Fiction, and maybe we'll be doing it next week and we can relitigate this argument.
Yeah.
But I think this movie is just as deserving and just as admirable an achievement as something like Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. So
they're two very different movies. So to compare them and say that Gump shouldn't have won, even though it's just as good of a movie, is kind of a straw man, rebel teenager, 90s kid bullshit. Definitely. You know?
Well, so I think the thing is, and the comparison I was thinking about today is, this is basically like in what we just talked about, if The Fablemans wins over Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yes.
Because The Fablemans is the type of movie that we've seen before. We've seen, and it's a well-made movie, but we've seen this movie before. And Everything Everywhere All at Once is a completely different
new thing.
We've never seen anything groundbreaking like this.
Yeah.
Yes. Both in terms of the cast and the themes and what it deals with, but then also the multiverse aspect of it, and the fact that this is coming out when there's all these other multiverse things coming out, and it did it so well, and it was able to take such a complex complex idea and distill it down to something that was understandable in a two-hour movie. And I think that's where Pulp Fiction is the same thing, right? This it's not the first movie to do this kind of unstructured hyperloop or hyperlink kind of like out of order plot where everything ties together. But it was like the first like big one to do this, and the first one to do it from like an independent movie perspective, right? True. Where it's not this. I mean, it was Miramax, but this is Miramax before Miramax was Miramax, right? Mm. So,
I think that's a really, really good comparison, and I'll be interested to, you know, maybe relitigate this next week depending on what wins Best Picture. But I think that's a really astute observation. Mm-hmm. It's not like Fablemans is a bad movie. It's not like you have to say Fablemans is horrible in order to say that Everything Everywhere All at Once deserves to win. Both can be true. Both can be good movies. It doesn't have to be binary. And that's my argument with Forrest Gump and Pulp Fiction. It's not an either or. It's not binary.
And I will say, at the time, I did like Crash when Crash came out. You know, revisiting it, it's not very good. It's not very deep. But like, I thought, you know, Crash was doing some interesting things, and it crashes the hyperlink. You know, this is Pulp Fiction kicks off all of these hyperlink movies, so it's kind of ironic that Crash, which is, you know, all of these disparate stories that all come together, is kind of like the bookend to these Oscar travesties. I guess I think Shakespeare in Love is another one that people point to.
That's the other thing too, is that you mentioned that Crash isn't a very deep movie. That's the argument people make about Forrest Gump as well.
Yes.
So maybe we should pivot to Forrest
Gump. Yeah.
It's not seen as a very deep movie. And watching it last night, I understand that argument. It is not. It hand waves its way through history. I mean, the first thing we see him do is sit down on a park bench, start a conversation with an African-American woman, telling her, hand-waving away his relation to the Ku Klux Klan, being named after the Ku Klux Klan found member, founder, Nathan Bedford Forrest. So, like, that sets our expectation that this is going to be a, you know, I said it to you last night, this is a, the way a man yada yadas his way through history. You know what I mean?
Right, but like that sort of, I mean, that works for the character whose perspective we're seeing this through, right? We're seeing this through somebody who's perceptive of what things are going on, but sees things through a very kind of, he sees things through a very simple lens. And what I see a lot in this is the Forrest character thrives when he is being told, do this, right? As a private in the army, that is where he's like, or as a running back where they say, run the ball, stop running. Like, and, you know, throughout his life, but when he has to deal with these kind of more complex things, he isn't able to fully grasp it, even if he's able to understand it, he's not able to fully grasp it, right?
Yeah, so, for sure.
I think, like, on this watch, I really, really like the last third of this, and I like this movie. You know, it's hard for me to separate my, like, nostalgia for it, and obviously my love for Tom Hanks, but, like, what my memory is of seeing this movie versus the movie itself. But I don't ever remember being that moved by the end of this movie like I was last night. Like, where, you know, I kind of welled up a little bit when he's standing over the grave of Jenny and talking to her. That moment, and then the other moment, which this is a moment where I was like, okay, this is where Tom Hanks wins the Oscar, much like how I felt at the end of Captain Phillips, is when he sees Little Forrest for the first time, and he's watching him, and he's talking to Jenny, and this is where you're like, oh, he actually does get what's going on, because he says, is he smart? Like, he's so self-aware to know, like, this is who I am in the world.
Is he like me, or is he?
Right. Did I pass this on to my child?
And I'm glad that you brought this up, because this is the argument that I brought up last week that I wanted to have in regards to the choice that Benjamin Button makes at the end of Benjamin Button, and the choice to leave that child and not care for that child that he has with the Kate Blanchett character. And in this movie, Forrest instead stays and raises that child with Jenny, and then raises that child as a single dad after she passes away. So they are both faced with a similar premise of given the opportunity to care for a young child, and one of them chooses to walk away and pursue their own destiny and leave this kid. And the other one instead accepts it and embraces it and embraces that love. And I respond much more positively to the Forrest Gump choice than I do the Benjamin Button choice.
And it's a hard decision, right? And he's putting both would be putting the child in a hard, I mean, as the single father, even though he has all of these resources because he's so wealthy now, Forrest, as the father of this kid, now the kid is older, and the kid, intelligence-wise, I think by the end of the movie, is probably surpassed Forrest.
Right. I mean, it's Kelly Joel Osment. He can see dead people and a lot of other things. So, you know.
So, I think that is an interesting comparison. And that's not one that there's other things that I put together between the two movies, but that's not really one I thought about. But I think Forrest, you know, stays because of his love for Jenny, because of necessity. I feel like I've heard this argument before. Do you think there's any merit to, like, do we know Forrest Jr. is actually Forrest Gump's kid? I know Jenny tells him that.
We're pretty sold on the idea that it is, for a couple of reasons. They have sex the night before that she leaves. We sort of yada yada the fact that they had sex, but they definitely had sex the night before she hops in the taxi and leaves. And then it turns out she has this mysterious disease that doctors don't have a cure for. We can just say it's AIDS.
She has AIDS.
She has HIV. She has AIDS. And it's only been 4 or 5 years. It could be somebody else's, but I don't know that she would have called Forrest if it weren't actually Forrest's child. I don't think, because that's not the kind of person Jenny has been throughout this movie.
But Jenny has been somebody throughout this movie who kind of, like, she obviously doesn't treat Forrest that great all the time, right? And she is with Forrest when she needs Forrest, but she's very quick to dispose of him or that's leave him when she doesn't. And I think there definitely could be a situation where, like, I mean, you're putting a lot of faith in Forrest Gump understanding how to successfully procreate, one time. I mean, it's not impossible.
The problem is, who else's kid is it? And if it was, I mean, she would be exposing this child being born with HIV, right? If she,
I think the assumption is that she got HIV after she had the child.
Okay. Yeah, because like she would have had to, because otherwise either the kid could be
she could have passed it on.
Right.
Or also, she could have gotten it. I mean, I think that also the assumption is that, like, the intravenous drug use is probably how she got it. But it's, I mean, it's not clear. And and I don't know for sure, like, how HIV, like, how often HIV is passed on from a mother to a child. Like, if a mother has HIV, I'm not sure how quickly that, or how, like, frequently that's passed on.
Yeah.
So I do think there is a world where Jenny left Forrest and got pregnant from somebody and doesn't know who the father is, but she does know Forrest. And really, I mean,
she did name him after Forrest.
She did. Yeah, that's true. She did name him Forrest Jr. And I guess biologically, it doesn't really matter if he's Forrest's biological son or not. Right.
That's the other thing.
He is named after Forrest.
Yep.
Better namesake that, you know, his father's a better namesake than what Forrest Gump was namesake for. And this is the child that, you know, whether it's surrogate father or actual biological father, is the
because
one.
Because, I mean, not all real, you know, I mean, it can take, anybody can be a father. It takes somebody special to be a dad.
There you go.
You know, is what the, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 or Parenthood would teach us. You know, or Parenthood. Yeah, the Keanu monologue in Parenthood would teach us, you know.
I also, so I want to go back to this theme of destiny versus blowing in the wind. And I think another way that that ties into it is that life is like a box of chocolates line, which is, you know, one of the, probably the most iconic or second most iconic line from this movie. And thinking about life is like a box of chocolates, kind of being on that side of blowing in the wind, right? That like it's random that you pick a chocolate out and you don't know what it's going to be. And life is random, right?
Well, this is what you're saying as far as like destiny versus free will. It also is that you could use the destiny half and look at the outline on the top of the box to know which one is in which slot, or you can not look at the outline on the top of the box, knowing which one is which, and just shove your hand in and pick one.
And that's the second half of that line, right? Life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get, right? Yeah. And that you can pick another, right? That you pick one, you go to war, and then you pick another one and you invest in Apple, right?
Could invest in Apple.
Yep. And so, you know, and I think like, I'm sure I don't have the list of songs in front of me, but I'm sure we hear Blown in the Wind by.
We do. It's what
Jenny's playing.
It's what Jenny's playing at the Naked Folk Show. Yeah.
The Naked Folk Show. So, you know, that song Blowing in the Wind, life is like a box of chocolates, the visual of the feather blowing in the wind, you know, in, on the destiny side, do we see other ways that the theme of destiny is presented besides Lieutenant Dan saying that it's my destiny?
I mean, he interacts with destiny all the freaking time. When you look at, you know, one of the first historic figures that pops up in this movie is Elvis Presley. Voiced by Kurt Russell, different person on screen, but voiced by Kurt Russell actually reprising his performance as a young Elvis Presley in the 1980s
movie. I totally forgot about that. That was Elvis Presley in there.
It's Elvis Presley, and he, you know, if he had not stayed at that particular boarding house with Forrest, and this is what the movie's saying, and this is the preposterous premise of this movie, is that you have to believe that not only is Forrest interacting with these people, but his interaction has meaning to everything.
Has changed history.
Changed history in some way. He teaches Elvis how to do the shaky leg dance that gets him in trouble on TV doing a hound dog. So if Elvis had not stayed at the Gump boarding house, would he have become a hit on TV doing his performance of hound dog?
Yeah,
that's the thing. Like,
but do you think that's destiny, or do you think that's blowing in the wind? Like Elvis blew in the wind, and you know, maybe there's no answer to that.
And maybe it's both. I mean, maybe he helped shape destiny. I don't know.
The only other place that I see like fate versus free will, and on this fate side, is the gospel church that we see.
Yeah.
That Forrest ends up giving some money to as well.
Yep.
So, You know, what do you think about just kind of the way that the history of the 60s and 70s is presented? Like, what do you think, like, do you like the moments that they choose to show? We get these, like, rose-colored glasses of things,
it's right? Very rose-colored. It's very grade school. Let me take you through the 1950s, 60s, and 70s through the eyes of, you know, simplistic, this is what happened type mm-hmm. stuff, where
this,
we
then
get,
this, then this.
You know, yeah. we get the JFK assassination mentioned. We get RFK mentioned. We get the civil rights movement and the breaking of segregation at the University of Alabama.
Right.
You know, we get the shooting of George Wallace. We get all these different things without feeling the need to have him have an emotional catharsis about each and every one.
Right. And it's sort of like a Wikipedia, right? Where he's just saying this happened and this happened and I happened
kind
to be
of,
there.
It's a movie Wikipedia. And I kind of like it for that and appreciate it for that, mostly because it's consistent in how it does it. Mm-hmm. If it weren't consistent, if he stopped down to have all these, you know, if he stopped down to like dive deeper into one or two of these moments, it would throw off the entire vibe of the movie. The only real time we spend in any of these major historical events that he's quote unquote a part of, like, I mean, he stays at the Watergate at one point, right, and just happens to be there the night of the
and
plumbers.
He's the one who calls in the,
yeah,
the
for the
burglars.
Plumbers. Yeah. Right. But we spend significant time in Vietnam for like a solid half hour of this movie. We are in Vietnam and dealing with the after effects of a wounded soldier hospital in Vietnam. And I think that is a really interesting choice to spend so much time in this setting after we've yada yada'd so much else of history. So it sort of turns this into a war movie for a solid 30 to 45 minutes.
I'm glad that you brought that up. Yeah. Because, so you are not in this group, but there is the Nairobi Pod WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, one of the 32 fans patron WhatsApp groups. And for the last probably 24 hours, there has been some heavy debate in there about, is X a war movie? The big debate right now is Top Gun a war movie? Which, like, not a chance.
It's not a war movie. It's a, because they're not actually going to war. It's a secret mission movie. Yes. It's a secret mission movie. It's a heist movie.
Top Gun, it's the first Top Gun.
Top Gun? No, it's not a war movie. They don't actually go to war in that movie. Yeah. No.
Yes, no. Well, that group is going to war over that question. And so my question for you was going to be, is Forrest Gump a war movie?
Yes. I'm going to say yes.
I think so, too.
Because so much of the plot takes place in Vietnam, and then he deals with the after effects of Vietnam when he goes to D.C., and he's part of the rally led by Abbie Hoffman, mm-hmm. which is hilarious. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to see D.C., you know? Like, I've been to
there. I do always like seeing old D.C. on film.
I really
this
love
was a little
seeing
bit like,
old D.C.
Yeah, this was a little bit like too pretty to be D.C.,
yeah.
I feel like.
I mean, you said you had your chills or tearing up moment towards the last night towards the end of the film.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely got chills at the memorial speech when he's doing, you know, he's doing his speech and the microphone cuts out and then it cuts back in time for him to say Forrest Gump, and then Abbie Hoffman's like, Forrest Gump.
Yeah, I
and
do love the way Abbie Hoffman
hear
says it.
Jenny, like far off in the distance, yell Forrest, and they like he says Jenny, and they go running towards each other and they meet in the middle of the reflecting pool, and it's just so, like, adorable.
It's a
and
scene I always think of when I'm over by that reflecting pool. I always think of that scene.
For sure.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, that I think that, like, the fact that Jenny just happens to be there is, like, Jenny's version of Forrest happening on all of these events. Like, what are the chances that Jenny just happens to be in D.C. at the same time as Forrest and sees him? The chances of that happening are so minuscule, and so that's minuscule. Where it's, like, is it destiny that
and
they,
that he gets
they were
pulled
run
up
into
to the
each
stage?
Other.
Like, he wasn't even supposed to be in that parade of veterans giving speeches. So mm-hmm. it's very like happenstance.
Yeah.
But the
I did really like too that mm-hmm. that the it's I never noticed it before, but it's like there it's not just the microphone goes out,
right?
But it's that there is an officer who unplugs the microphone
exactly
because he doesn't want him revealing the secrets.
Exactly. All this other stuff. Like, it's, yeah, he doesn't want anti-war protesters saying all this bad stuff about Vietnam, so he tries to sabotage the equipment, and mm-hmm. they, like, fight him off. It's it's this whole cool sequence. And so we talked about this last night a little bit. There is a thing that HBO used to do in the 90s, early 2000s, where they would have like 20 to 30 minute behind the scenes documentary style things, where they would do a behind the scenes featurette about a new movie. Mm-hmm. And that was coming out that weekend or had just come out. And the one they did on Forrest Gump in 94 is one that I remember really, really distinctly, especially because they spend a lot of time going behind the scenes of how they staged this scene in DC. Mm. Like exactly like how Jenny was going to put her arms around Forrest and say, "I'll always be your girl." And one of the cool things in that behind the scenes is that you get to hear the whole speech Forrest gives. Mm-hmm. That's like,
and so you hear what he says, yeah, that gets cut out.
It gets cut out. Yeah. And that's like, he's like, you know, Vietnam is one of those places where you can lose your best friend. And then he like says something else about Bubba and something else. And then that's when it cuts back in. And he's like, that's all I have to say about that. Mm-hmm. And so you get to like see stuff like that. So I don't know if those things are on YouTube, but like, it's a really cool one to check out for this movie. They also spend a lot of time with young Forrest, like the actor who played young Forrest at the beginning of the film, and Tom Hanks, learning each other's mannerisms and like how they were gonna match and mirror each other.
Yeah, Michael Connor Humphreys, who has not been in anything else besides this movie.
Yeah.
So he was in something called Little Forrest in 2009. I don't know if that's some sort of spinoff. I mean, it's probably like a documentary about making Forrest Gump. And I think too, like this, you know, this is a movie where war is the pivot point of the movie, right? Like everything leads up to Forrest going to Vietnam. Yeah. And then so much of it is not just Forrest, the after effects on Forrest of Vietnam, but the effect on everybody after Vietnam. Yeah. Exactly. You know, obviously Lieutenant Dan, he loses his legs, and we deal with Lieutenant Dan's after effects and Lieutenant Dan's journey that kind of comes to a nice conclusion at the end where he comes to the wedding. But then also Jenny becomes an anti-war protester, which leads her down this path of getting into drugs and
she goes to San Francisco. And
we
didn't talk much about the needle drops, but that is also where the movie really, once he gets to Vietnam, the soundtrack for this movie just kicks full force into the late 60s, early 70s, stereotypical soundtrack, but I absolutely love it. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it's so on the nose. I mean, you get Fortunate Son flying into the jungles of Vietnam.
Yeah.
You get, if you're going to San Francisco, when the guy drives up to ask if anybody wants to go to San Francisco, I mean, you get California Dreamin' when he's dreaming about Jenny in the jungle. It's so on the nose, but I absolutely love it because I'm a sucker for that music.
Yeah. I prefer, I mean, like the songs are all good. It's obviously a very good soundtrack, but like that's sort of where this movie, there were some things that definitely like were cringy and eye-roll-y for me. And like how on the nose it was, it was just like, it's funny at first, it's kind of cute, but it's almost like too cute by half a lot of times.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
The San Francisco one really is a little too cute by half, where
the
guy drives up and is like, anybody want to go to San Francisco? And then it starts playing if you're going to San Francisco, and you're like, come on. Right.
I did feel like it was interesting that the Doors, we hear the Doors,
like
at least three or four songs by the Doors in this movie. And I don't know how many other repeats. I know there's a couple CCR songs that we hear. And I think a couple Simon and Garfunkel songs, too.
Yep.
But yeah, definitely the Doors. I was like, wow, we're hearing a lot of Doors music, and especially when he's playing ping pong and things like that. Yep. And you know, it's a good soundtrack. They obviously must have like paid a ton of money for the rights to all of these songs. Absolutely. And I do remember that my friend had the 2-disc CD for this.
Yep. It was a classic. Yeah. Classic soundtrack.
And I think the score, the Alan Silvestri score, you know, that kind of like sweet music that we open and close with, I think that's really effective and probably more effective than the songs that are in the movie than the soundtrack.
Yeah, I think the soundtrack's really good. And the score is really good, too. I mean,
Alan
Silvestri's done a lot of good work over the years.
Now that I'm on like some of my complaining stuff, I do want to complain about a couple other things. So the thing, and I actually have it written twice in my notes, which is kind of fitting, is repetitions in this movie.
Yeah.
that style, which, you know, we get repetitions in Back to the Future as well. So it's clearly something that Robert Zemeckis likes to go to. But like where we see, you know, each person like telling, you know, Bubba's family and Lieutenant Dan's family and Forrest's family. And we see like each of them through history. And we just see like this ancestor, all played by, you know, Gary Sinise playing each of his ancestors that dies in the war, or Tom Hanks playing his ancestor who, or playing the KKK guy that he's named after. It wasn't necessarily his ancestor. And just like that, we get like these similar beats that are repeated so many times through
the movie. They do it with Bubba's mama too, where they're like, his mama before her cooked shrimp, and her mama before her cooked shrimp, and so on.
And I do like it that it's that Bubba's mama then is she's being waited on by a white person.
That's at the end.
She has all this money. Yeah, that's a nice payoff to that.
Yeah, it's a good
payoff. Just like the beats and the things that are, you know, the Forrest always saving Jenny and like punching the guy that's
That happens so many times.
Yeah. Right. And like the, we also see like one of the ways that they show the history is that we're always seeing things on TV, right? We're seeing the moon landing on TV, but everybody's watching him play ping pong, or we're seeing like assassinations of political figures.
The Bobby Kennedy assassination, of these, Wallace.
And maybe that's to, you know, maybe the point is like history repeats itself, right? Like these bad, like this president got assassinated. There's an attempt on this president. There's an attempt on this president.
And there's a certain real life aspect that to that as well, that, you know, you and I have talked about this a lot in our conversations with each other and with our friend Mac in our chat we have about, like, you know, the amount of history that has, that's always happening in the background while we try to live our lives, and how much of that, of these historic events that we are living through affect us, and we let them affect us, and how much we have to focus on our own, lives and our own destiny. Or do we let ourselves be consumed by the world events that are so awful that are going on around us? And I think that's sort of the balance this movie is trying to strike. You know what I mean? Like, we are all observers to history as we're living our lives.
And we sometimes we don't realize that we're seeing history.
Exactly.
Yeah, the difference is Forrest is like blissfully unaware about these
things. Of course.
So,
And that gives it a, you know, saccharine sentimentality to it that a lot of people complain about.
Saccharine is a great way to describe this movie.
Here's the thing is that my counter to that is, you know, and I wrote this down, we live in such a harsh and cynical time. Sometimes you need a little sweetness and saccharine and sugar, you know, not everything. I don't want all of my media to be freaking House of the Dragon. Sometimes I want to watch Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, because it makes me feel good, because it's a feel good story.
Yeah.
Rather than the deep, dark, everybody's getting, you know, beheaded and kicked, you know, their asses kicked and, you know, abused. And I don't want that on my screen all the time. Sometimes I want a 30-minute scene where an elf and a dwarf are just hanging out, sharing jokes.
Yeah.
You know?
So you want sometimes, you want the Forrest Gump perspective, the Forrest Gump viewpoint, the optimistic, and not the Lieutenant Dan, right?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Or, you know, the Forrest Gump versus the platoon or Born on the 4th of July.
That's more story. That's more how I would describe it. Yeah.
So,
I mean, we Deer Hunter might come up, but I mean, Deer Hunter is a really good counterpoint to this movie. You know, as far as the way Vietnam, the way it treats Vietnam and the people who come home after Vietnam.
Yeah. You know? And I think Curious Case of Benjamin Button had some of the saccharine view of history, you know, like history. There wasn't a historical event in Benjamin Button.
I mean, there was World War II, but that was the big one. Yeah.
World War One.
Was it World War? No, it was World War II.
It was World War II. You're right. Yeah, World War II. It started at the end of World War One. All right. I don't know. Do you think we can go to feedback? Is there anything else you want to make sure we touch on with this movie?
Let's go to feedback, and then we can, because I think we'll talk more as we get into feedback and our one last things and et cetera. Yeah, let's get into feedback.
Okay. All right. So feedback. It's funny. We're talking about cynical. I feel like I'll be curious if we have cynical people in the feedback. I know in the Letterboxd reviews, if we choose to read them, there's definitely some pretty cynical Letterboxd reviews.
Oh, really are. Yeah. They really are.
Which, I mean, have valid points.
I get it. Yeah, I mean, I know that. Yeah, a lot of the points are valid. I just, you know, it's a matter of, you know, like we talked about, what's the worldview you want to live in, you know? Mm-hmm. Are you willing to forgive a certain amount of sappiness?
There you go, yeah. You know? I do have a question once we get your score. I have a specific question for you about your score.
When we
get there. Okay. All right. I'm going to do the first two because we don't have a review from the first one. So Alexo gave this a 4.5, but did not send in any review.
Nope. He just said no review, just a 4.5.
Okay. So he said no review.
No, he did not say no review. He just didn't have a review.
So he just didn't have his.
Just a straight 4.5
from Alex. Straight 4.5 from Alexo. All right. Olin, this is actually one of the people who I was expecting a cynical review from.
Yep.
Olin says, rather silly at times, but hard to take my eyes away. Kind of irritating, captivating in similar measures. First thing to strike me was, would Forrest have told his life story at the bus in such a birth to now chronological order? Nice if he had tried to jump around the story chronologically.
Yeah, here's the thing. This is something that I wanted to talk about when we got to Olin's feedback is, Forrest spends the entire time telling this story while sitting on this bench. But it turns out that he didn't have to be there at all, because where he was trying to go was only a few blocks away. So that leads into your destiny thing, where he's sitting there destined to tell his life story at a park bench when he could have just not... He didn't need to go there at all. He could have just already been at Jenny's. Mm-hmm. And then we don't get this entire story.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of like goes to the happenstance of, right, exactly. Right? Of like this movie, right? Where he just happens to stumble on, he just happens to stumble on this moment, right? He happens to like be sitting there, and it's sort of the punchline, right? It's kind of like the punchline with Bubba's mom then being served, you know, by a white woman because she has money. Yeah. But like, oh, it's just over there. You didn't need to be
sitting there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You need a bus. Yeah.
Yeah. So, All right. Speaking of Olin, we have some Olin trivia that he sent me.
Oh, boy. So we set a 3 from Olin, right? Which is higher than I was expecting from
him. Higher than I was expecting as well.
Yeah.
All right. Olin says, can you guess where Forrest Gump ranks among the 94 best pitcher winners for him?
For him? I'm going to say there's only 5 nominees, right?
Of the 94 best pitcher winners that he watched, where does Forrest Gump fall in the rankings of those 94 that he's seen?
I'm going to say fourth.
Fourth overall?
Out of the 5 that he saw, yeah.
No, out of every best pitcher winner ever of his ranking.
Of the 1994.
No, so sorry.
That's why I thought you were just asking of the 5 94 nominees. You asked
I think he means of the 94 winners that have won.
Oh,
so it just happens that it's 90. It happens that
okay. You were throwing me off there.
Blame Olin for that.
Badly worded question. I'm gonna say in honor of the 75th annual Academy Awards, 75th.
75th. 43.
Okay, so that's not bad. It's like
right in the middle. Yeah,
right in the middle. That's not bad at all.
Now we'll go to those 5 movies that were nominated. Which Oscar nomination for that year would have been his best picture?
It's probably not Pulp Fiction if he's asking this question. It's probably something else. I don't even remember what else was nominated this year. Can you give me the list of nominees, please, sir?
Quiz Show was on there, Four Weddings and a Funeral, Pulp Fiction, Forrest Gump, and there was one other. It's not that fifth one.
He probably would have said Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Yes, it is Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah, I closed out the Oscars. Shawshank was the fifth one.
Shawshank. Yeah. Oh, it's a Shawshank year, too. That's wild.
He said, but Four Weddings and a Funeral was not his favorite film of the year. I'll just tell you that. His favorite film was Heavenly Creatures by Peter Jackson.
Okay. So. A film I have not seen that I want to see. Okay, there you go.
Yep. Cool. And he did send me his ranking of every Best Picture winner. which we're not going to get into that level of trivia, but if anybody wants it, you can ask Olin, or I guess you can ask me.
Yeah, where does he rank all 10 of the nominees from this year? Let's get into that.
Exactly. No,
we're not doing that.
I know he was a big Coda fan last year, so we'll see if they can.
Coda is very good. Coda is very good.
I think Coda is up there with Crash.
I think we will look back on that Oscars in a few years and relitigate Coda, but I do think Coda is a perfectly fine film.
Okay.
Yeah, but you know, it also hit a note for me being a partially hearing impaired person.
Yes.
So it hit a note for me.
Hit a note for you, yes. That sounds good, Brendan. All right, go ahead.
Not quite my tempo. All right, Stefan said, classic film for a reason. Mostly, I just want to defend Jenny. She was a very broken person before she even met Forrest. Her life was probably full of even more trauma than his. I don't think she used Forrest at all. I believe that he taught her what love actually is. She struggled her whole life to understand it, and it was Forrest who helped her to see it, just like he helped everyone else in his life see into themselves. She was lost and came back to him because he was her constant. Sometimes you get lost, quote unquote, on your way back home. 4.5 from Stefan. This is a great point. We didn't talk too much about this. You know, Jenny.
We probably short shrifted Jenny in general.
We probably did. Jenny is a really complicated character. And this leads to the thing we were talking about. Not only does it sort of yada yada over actual historical events, but it's sort of yada yadas through Jenny's life in a way that you sort of forget about it by the end, in that Jenny was basically being abused by her father for years.
Yeah, sexually abused.
Sexually and physically abused by her father for years before escaping and going and living with her grandmother. And then she has this whole cathartic moment when she reunites with Forrest, and, you know, he ends up tearing the house down that she lived in at the end of the movie.
And they have the moment where they throw the rocks through the window. Yeah. And there's a couple references to other movies, right, that we do get during this. You know, we get nods to other movies, including the one with Ratso Rizzo.
Don't step on my one last thing.
All right, okay.
I have a whole thing about Midnight Cowboy.
Okay. All right, well, we do get references to that. But yeah. The throwing the rock through window reminds me of It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
Which may absolutely. Be maybe
it's very It's a Wonderful Life. Yep.
Yeah, so. no, and I think, like, I do really love that Forrest, you know, he tells her, because this is after she dies, when he's talking to her in her grave, and he says, I destroyed your father's house. I bulldozed it. And that's one of those things that is like a really complex idea. Like, that's a very complex way of thinking that, like, I'm going to destroy this thing that is symbolic of the trauma and abuse that you had in your life. And that he's able to grasp that and do that for her.
Yeah, exactly. And this movie hints at a lot of complex conversations that it doesn't have the time to stop down on. And that's, you know, the morality of the Vietnam War, and the drug use, and the sexual abuse, and the her having HIV but not calling it HIV.
Well, because they didn't know what it was.
They didn't know what it was when she died.
Well, and I think that the perspective of this movie being told through Forrest is that he observes these things, and he might be able to internalize some of this, but isn't able to actually vocalize it, right? He's correct. The way he speaks is slower, things like that.
Exactly.
So.
Like we get with, you know, with the school teacher at the very beginning when, you know, the great Sam Anderson comes out.
That was gonna be my one last thing.
The great Sam Anderson, speaking of Lost, comes out of the house and he's like, "Your mama really would do anything for you." And he's like, "You know, do you have anything to say?" And Forrest's response is actually clever as hell. Instead of talking to the teacher, he just starts mimicking the noise of them having sex at him. And it's, like, so clever. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, that's why I started the podcast with that, but you didn't appreciate it.
It cracked me up. I did appreciate it. I just wasn't expecting it.
Yeah. Even when I saw that, I did not realize that was Sam Anderson from Lost until I saw the cast list. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that was.
Nerd.
All right.
Which is why I always accidentally think he's the doctor in this instead of the teacher. He's playing a doctor.
Yeah. The dentist, yeah. All right, only one more bit of feedback. I'm kind of surprised. Kind of low tonight. All right. Jim Crumley says, Forrest Gump is the ultimate boomer fairy tale. Forrest's mom raises him alone, but subjects herself to a scumbag school administrator to get Forrest an education. Forrest meets his true love as a child and crosses paths with her throughout the movie before finally getting the girl when she has a terminal illness. Really sad bit of irony that they finally get together and strikes a little close to home for me right now as well.
Yeah, and it's very indicative of Benjamin Button as well, where they're constantly falling in and out of their relationship over the years of that movie. And
Yeah. And actually, I mean, like, I'll say it for connections, but I think that there's a very strong connection between those two things. All right. Forrest photobombs half the most important events in American culture from 1956 to 1982. The special effects putting Forrest into old footage and Lieutenant Dan's legs look a little dated, but it is hard not to give them a pass. I actually thought they looked pretty good. I mean, you know,
yeah, that's another one of the really fun ones that they get into in the HBO behind the scenes is how they digitally recreated this archival reel of John F. Kennedy shaking hands with football players and how they inserted Tom Hanks into that footage and how they had to like position it just so that it looked like he was really there. And it actually looks pretty good for the time that was done, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Another minor point was more troublesome. Teenage Tom Hanks Forrest runs nothing like the more natural style that the just out of leg braces young Forrest had.
I didn't know when you're a kid than you do as an adult, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not a runner, but I imagine, you know, you're a runner. Your stride was probably way different when you were trying to run as a kid. You know, away from bullies, or at least mine was, as it is when you're an adult, right?
Yeah. I didn't notice that because I think I was just like so distracted by like the slow motion run forest,
right?
And like,
yeah,
it's just like that scene, and so many scenes of this have been parodied so much along the way, including by Al Yankovic, by Weird Al Yankovic, like that. It's, you know, it's just like you see that stuff, and it's kind of hard. It's almost like, you know, watching Jaws, where. You know, you forget like this is the first time, like you forget the first time of seeing this stuff, right? So it's hard to separate the parody, and it feels really cheesy because it's been parodied so much. But was it cheesy the first time, or is it just cheesy because it's like, you know, because it's been used so many times? So anyways, all of that, Jim says 4.5 out of 5. Jim score.
Fantastic. That's going to be a 4.125 from the listeners. Not too shabby.
I'm shocked how high this listener score is.
I'm happy with how.
Although I know like there's a couple people who said they don't like this movie that did not write in. So
I mean, that's fine, and that's their prerogative. And we're not telling you have to like the movie. We're just telling you why we like the movie. Yeah. So there you go.
Okay. Great.
Speaking of which, why don't I go first this week? I think you went first last week with Benjamin.
Maybe.
I'm gonna give this movie a 4.5. It is not a perfect movie. It's not. We've talked about, you know, some of its flaws, some of its criticisms. But overall, I mean, this is just a wonderful movie to go back and revisit. And I'll talk about this a little more in my one last thing. But the middle hour to hour and 15 of this movie just absolutely slap. Like, as soon as Lieutenant Dan shows up on screen, this movie really kicks into a gear that it didn't have up until that point. And it stays there for a good, you know, for over an hour. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love it. So there you go. 4.5 for me.
I'm a little lower than you and a little lower than I was expecting on this watch. I'm a 4. And I just think some of the style stuff just kind of like, it's just a little too much, too cute by half sometimes. But I really like where this movie ends up. I really like the end of it. It's the tragic story of Forrest and Jenny. And I like the like run through history. There were a lot that like I could appreciate now that I couldn't appreciate, you know, 10, 15 years ago when I last saw it.
Being Abbie Hoffman at the
or
rally.
Just like the stuff the stuff that's on TV. Right. The like all of the assassinations and stuff like the real life stuff. Like I was, you know, when he meets up with I think Lyndon B. Johnson was when he says JFK as well. You know, I was like a little distracted by that footage trying to be like, oh, is this like is this real footage that they put him into? Like, how do they do this? But yeah. And I think like I do think like Gary Sinise. Just to go to my hero of the movie, Gary Sinise, I thought was great. Like I said on Twitter earlier, I did spoil my hero of the movie, but it is Gary Sinise for me and the Lieutenant Dan character.
Yeah, it's the same.
Yeah. I just think like that performance was really good. And I think that character brings like the dark perspective to this movie, the non-saccharine perspective. Although he does get around to the saccharine perspective by the end of the movie. And I love when he jumps into the water and he's swimming backwards and just like that freedom that he feels, especially for somebody who can't walk to then be swimming. I just think like And I love the confidence that we see him with when we first meet him, knowing where his story is going to end up.
It's fantastic. And I love when Forrest is dragging him through the jungle away from where everybody got blown up, and he's firing behind him as Forrest is trying to get him out of there. Just will not give up.
Yeah. Connections to movies that I watched this week. The idea of carrying your comrades out of the out of battle on your shoulders. That is in what in All Quiet on the Western Front.
Of course. Yeah. So, it's a staple of any war movie. I mean, this movie takes all the war movie tropes, you know, and puts them in one place.
We talked about some of the other movies that it borrows from, but like Apocalypse Now, definitely with the Vietnam stuff that it borrows from that, and borrows from a whole lot of movies where the movie references throughout this movie that I didn't pick up on the first time I saw it necessarily. So, all right. Connection. So this movie has come up a few times, but not as much as I would have thought. It did not come up after Tropic Thunder, although you had in your notes that it references Tropic Thunder references. Yes. But you did not actually suggest it. But it was suggested by you off of Across the Universe.
Yep.
So kind of that interacting with history. And we did have John Lennon.
That's one of my movie maps as well, is Across the Universe. It just makes a lot of sense with the soundtrack and with the Vietnam setting and the anti-war stuff and the love, you know, the lovers meeting each other, not meeting each other across the ages.
Olin suggested it off of The Notebook. Characters starts telling their life story.
Yep. There you go.
And then it didn't come up again until last week off of Curious Case of Benjamin Button. So connections to Benjamin Button, obviously both kind of these fable stories of people through the years, both written by Eric Roth as well.
Yep. Also based on a book. I mean, both based on a best-selling book. Both take start their narratives in a boarding house.
Yes.
So we have Mama Gump's boarding house, and we have is it Queenie? Was that her name? Queenie's boarding house.
In the South, both
in the South. Yeah, on the Bayou, we have the Alabama Bayou and the Louisiana Bayou in both.
So Forrest carries around that Curious George book, and I couldn't see that without seeing that be like
Curious Benjamin.
Curious George, Curious Forrest, Curious Benjamin. Maybe title connection. I'll save that. I think I have an idea for one.
Okay, great. I mean, I put one down, but we can. We have like the use of crutches or leg braces in both. the need to supplement your ability to walk with some form of crutch or brace. Let's see what else I had written.
Did you catch Bubba's first name?
Buford, right? No.
No, Benjamin.
Oh, it is Benjamin. That's right, Benjamin Buford Blue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Triple Benjamin. Yeah. Yep. There you go.
And then the last one that I have is just the idea of like your partner getting sick or a loved one getting sick. And I was thinking about Curious Case of Benjamin Button. And we talked a lot about, or I talked a lot about like, you know, that marriage and aging, like it can get gross. Right. And there are those gross parts of Benjamin Button and like those grotesque parts when they're getting older. Yeah. And I said that kind of works as like an allegory to being married and aging with your partner, but also the allegory of like, if your partner gets sick and you see them through sickness and through health, through these really bad and hard things to witness. And we see, you know, Benjamin getting smaller and more like a baby before he dies at the end of Benjamin Button. And we see Jenny and Forrest's mom both getting sick in that same bed. And that's that repetition, right? It's that same bedroom. Kind of reminds me of the like Lorraine McFly, her bedroom, in the bedroom thing. But yeah, so that sickness, I think, is a connection.
It's a good point. Yeah. I also had the whole thing about like, so Forrest goes to war, then ends up on a boat. Benjamin Button starts on a boat and ends up at war.
Yes, I did have boats.
So it's a mirror of those. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're both fishing vessels, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And boats in general, connection to other movies, you know, Walter Mitty as well.
Yep.
And on Golden Pond.
Yep.
Boats in On Golden Pond. Yep. So
the whole bit about death being just a part of life, which Mama Gump says, is really a theme of the whole of Benjamin Button. Because I mean, he starts out already with a clock knowing he's going to die. So death being a part of his life. mm-hmm. throughout is paramount to that narrative.
Yeah. Can we go to other connections to other movies from this year?
Absolutely.
Because I think that one also connects to On Golden Pond.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, with that idea of aging spouses as well. Yep. And, you know, the age that they are in On Golden... Well, I guess they're a little bit older than Forrest would have been in that year, but... And you know, the idea of adventure, of being out and exploring the world throughout your life. I mean, we see that in Walter Mitty, Into the Wild, Wild, a little bit in Treasure of the Sierra Madre as well.
Yep. And, you know, we have the whole connection to Life of Walter Mitty where, you know, he's searching for this whole catharsis with the Sean Penn character in Walter Mitty. And Dan, Lieutenant Dan, serves as that catharsis for Forrest Gump. Throughout Forrest Gump, and it's ironic. Well, no, that's not a connection. Never mind. I was gonna say because Gary Sinise and Sean Penn, but no, that's Sean Penn and Brad Pitt in Tree of Life.
Well, I mean, but I also think so in Secret Life of Walter Mitty, that's directed by Ben Stiller. Ben Stiller also directed Tropic Thunder, which also does reference Forrest Gump. So it's a little bit.
There you go. It's a circle. Circles.
This movie's a war movie, as is Top Gun Maverick, right? Yep. Oh, wait, no, never mind.
We have some war in Once Upon a Time in the West as well, right? Or am I thinking of... Oh, I'm thinking of Good, Bad, and the Ugly. Never mind.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the Good, and Bad, and the Ugly.
And then just people being on the water, too. We have Forrest and Little Forrest sitting at the end fishing together, which is, a really beautiful moment. I just love their interactions together since that moment where, you know, Forrest asks if he's smart. It's just, I'm so clued into that father-son relationship.
Absolutely.
But we had People on the Water and Pollock as well, and On Golden Pond, of course.
Yep.
And I think Treasure of the Sierra Madre. So.
Yep.
All right. Movie map time.
All right. As we talked about Across the Universe, I also wrote down The Aviator as a story with a person with an affliction, and it tells their life story through the decades.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they also interact with many famous people along the way, and the story of Howard Hughes and the story of Forrest Gump, even though Howard Hughes is a real person, obviously, and Forrest Gump is not. I wrote down The Aviator.
Yeah. I don't feel like I have a great... I guess, Apollo 10 and a half might be a good one, because it's, looking back at this time period, through somebody's perspective.
Yeah.
And the other one I wrote down was Easy Rider as well.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. So, and I think, I feel like they're kind of referencing The Graduate with Mrs. Robinson being played. Which I guess that can lead to your one last thing.
Yeah. So let's dive into my one last thing, which is the Midnight Cowboy connection. I had never realized this until this time watching this film, because I had never seen Midnight Cowboy until late last year when I watched it for Criterion. So Midnight Cowboy is a very famous film, where it's the first X-rated film to ever win Best Picture. And there is basically, it's about a cowboy who goes to New York and meets up with this grifter played by Dustin Hoffman, who's named Ratso Rizzo. And he's a real scumbag. And he, you know, it's Peter Fonda and Dustin Hoffman. And they're strolling around.
John Voight and Dustin Hoffman.
John Voight and Dustin Hoffman. Thank you for the correction. They're same person. Anyway. So throughout the entirety of that movie, there is this really famous Harry Nilsson song called Everybody's Talking About Me that is playing throughout the entirety of that movie. A dozen times that movie gets needle dropped. And so as soon as Forrest goes to New York and sees Lieutenant Dan and they start wandering around, we get the Harry Nilsson needle drop and the Midnight Cowboy homage because they start crossing the street and almost get hit by a taxi, and Lieutenant Dan does the Ratso Rizzo, I'm walking here, which is what happens in Midnight Cowboy. So there's this whole section of Forrest staying in New York with Lieutenant Dan, and his shitty apartment, and the stuff they're eating, and him caring for Lieutenant Dan as he's going through this depression. This is all directly homage to Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah.
And I absolutely loved it. I was like, wow, now I completely look at this part of the movie in a brand new way.
And I mean, there's a telling of this story where this movie becomes Midnight Cowboy, right? And Forrest doesn't buy the shrimp boat and do all this other stuff, and he just cares for Lieutenant Dan.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, I said I didn't have a one last thing, and now I have two. So I would just say on the repetition front, the other thing that was repetition in this was the amount of times that we see the new year, the ball dropping.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, several times. Yeah.
Which helps us know what year we're in also. But like, it's like, again, like that's that repetition. But my actual one last thing is shout out Siobhan Fallon Hogan, who plays the bus driver, who is not Allison Janney, but is one of those like Allison Janney types. She's the wife in Men in Black. I actually just saw her.
Yeah.
I started watching The Negotiator the other night, and she's in The Negotiator. She's like one of those people who's like always like a that.
Oh, lady. Yeah. She's the assistant, the office assistant in Negotiator, right?
Yeah. And she shows up in all kinds of, you know, she's in Boiler Room. She shows up in a lot of movies around this time.
Yeah.
Just one of those. And I always think that it's Allison Janney, and she's not Allison Janney, but she's very like I said, an Allison Janney type. So
an Allison Janney type. Yeah. Look at the smile on my face.
Oh, one other connection that I missed also. Sorry, I know this is three last things.
No, you're good.
It is, and this will lead us right into Lateral Rungs. I'm hoping that people were new enough not to suggest Elvis for us to do next week.
Yeah,
that'd be a great connection.
I hope they listened to our post-show recaps Oscar preview of Elvis that we did with Grace and Ariel last week.
Yeah, if you want a ladder to Elvis, because we do have Elvis in this movie, we have Tom Hanks doing a kind of absurd accent. You can watch or you can listen to our Elvis podcast on post-show recaps.
We had a lot of fun with that Best Picture nominee. Revisiting that one for post-show recaps.
Elvis will not be covered on this podcast because Brennan and I have already done a podcast on Elvis.
Elvis is not in the building.
Yes, that movie has left the building. All right, but we do have ladder rungs from listeners. So once we do pick our ladder rung or our next movie ladder rung, send us your feedback at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram, themovieladder@gmail.com. Send us your suggestions off of that one, and then also, you know, your score, feedback, all that good stuff.
Yep.
All right. And if you have a score for Forrest Gump and you didn't get it in, and you want to adjust that score, because what was the average? Was a 4.21.
Yeah, it was a 4 overall from Letterboxd purposes. So there you go.
4.21. So we're right on that border.
Right on that.
Almost a 4.5. All right. Alex says another movie with someone who is regarded as a simple man. And this is a one on my list. That is Being There.
Nice.
Being There. Very, very gumpy.
Peter Sellers. Yeah.
Yep. Next one. Another movie with that Hanks Zemeckis pairing. This one's Castaway.
Yep. I bet that was on your list, too.
It was not on my list, but I'm always down for that. And lastly, another movie set during the Vietnam War. Good Morning, Vietnam.
Yeah, and that one is Robin Williams is a radio jockey in Vietnam in that one, which is a fun connection if we did one where people are on the radio and we're talking about them.
Oh, true. Yeah, that's your podcast about the radio. And I do think it's like kind of coming from I haven't seen her in a long time, but I think it's coming from that perspective of like the kind of the sunny side of life.
Exactly.
Yeah, might be our title connection. We did it. Yep. All right. All on suggestions. P.S. I love you.
We didn't do a title connection to this movie, A Benjamin Button, by the way. We didn't go back to that.
Nope, we fucked up. We missed that.
We'll have to go
back. And I had one. The Curious Book is what I had as my title connection.
What about The Curious Gump?
Curious Gump? Well, we already have Gump in the title, though. And Gump doesn't really connect. Gump doesn't really connect to last week. There was no Gump
in Curious Life of Forrest Gump is what I wrote down.
The Curious Life of Forrest Gump. Well, because I wrote The Curious Book because we have Curious George. We both are based on a book.
Yeah, go for it.
The other one I had was The Words of Eric Roth.
No, I like The Curious Book.
Yeah, The Curious Book. Because we have The Curious George book. We have both our books.
Perfect. Yep.
All right. If we really wanted to be hat on a hat, we could do Curious Book of Life, but we'll just do
Curious
Book.
No, because we're not doing Tree of Life yet, so.
Not yet. But we have a Book of Life. Both of these are Books of Life.
Book of Life.
All right. Back to Olin's. P.S. I love you. adapted from a novel, central character feels the need to fulfill wishes and requests of a very close deceased person.
Mm-hmm.
Next one. Movie that I think you like, Brendan. Banshees of Inisherin.
Never heard of it.
A central character who is below average IQ, is very nice, and has close to loving relationship with Jenny. With a Jenny, and bores some people with his conversations. Hopefully we don't bore anybody with our conversations.
Dare you.
Yeah. Explores themes of a society during a controversial war as well.
There.
Yes. When he said a person with below average IQ, I thought he meant the Barry Keoghan character, not
I thought
the,
so too. But no, he meets Colin Farrell, and I'm like, how dare you?
Yeah. if we did that, I feel like is being nice enough could be our title connection.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And last one from Olin, Chariots of Fire, best picture film about men who find a release and meaning in life through running.
There you go.
So, running connection. Yep. I was running, so we can do that.
I started running.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think, like, also if Banshees of Inisherin beats Everything Everywhere All at Once this weekend, yeah. I feel like that could also be, like, Forrest Gump and Pulp Fiction, right?
That would be worth the debate, actually.
But I think people like Banshees a lot more than...
I think so, too.
But who knows? In 20 years, will people still look back on Banshees with fondness?
Mm. I mean, some of us will, and some of us won't.
Yeah.
And that's the great debate of the two characters of Banshees of Inisherin.
True.
What's your legacy versus is it enough to just be nice?
Yeah, that's true. Is it enough to just be nice? All right, Stefan says A Beautiful Mind, love story about a man with a mental illness.
Yep.
There you go. Saving Private Ryan, Tom Hanks in a war. I did have that on my list. Love. And for probably the third week in a row, at least, Big Fish, a man tells the stories of his wild life. I did think about that one.
Yep, good one.
And then Jim has Z-League. I've never seen this 1983 Woody Allen film, but it's a protagonist who runs into many famous people, and it clearly influenced Forrest Gump.
Indeed.
Never even heard of Z-League.
I've never heard of it, yeah.
Also going to throw one from Mac on there. He didn't officially nominate this, but he did say something about Pulp Fiction and that you can watch Pulp Fiction next. So.
Yeah, I mean, it was going to be on my list if we didn't add it from Mac. So
we'll just give Mac the...
We'll give Mac some props, yeah.
I thought Megan the Librarian said she was going to send some suggestions. We never got anything from her.
Hold on. I thought I put it in here. Did I not?
Nope.
Uh-oh. Did I ignore Megan the Librarian's email? I did.
Okay.
My bad. Let's edit this out.
Nope. That we're leaving it. What did Megan the Librarian suggest?
Megan the Librarian writes in and says, The Butler, a Gump-like voyage through 20th century American history.
Mm-hmm.
Dangerous Minds for the Weird Al connection of Gangster's Paradise
and Gump, yeah.
And then Dick, a different perspective on Watergate.
I feel like if we did Dick, our movie map would be like the easiest movie map ever, basically. So, nice. Okay. All right. There we go, Megan. I had you back. All right, Brennan, you get to go first.
Sorry, she's going to kill me. Yep. All right. I get to go first this week. All right. So there are several that got knocked off of my list. Let's see. What do I want to go with? I'm going to throw in Full Metal Jacket, the Kubrick war epic that looks at different sides of war.
Mm-hmm. I do feel like that's referenced with the drill sergeant, the way the drill sergeant yells it at Forrest.
I'm going to throw in a Tom Hanks movie that lost Best Picture. And there's been a lot of debate about whether or not it should have won, Apollo 13.
Mm-hmm. And Gary Sinise.
Yep, and Gary Sinise.
And, that was the year after this, correct? Was that 95?
Yep, year after this. In fact, there's a lot of debate about whether or not Hanks also should have won a third Oscar in a row.
Oh, man, iconic.
So, another one that this movie actually on this watch reminded me of, two movies, actually. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? For the journey through life and the Oedipal journey through his life. And the other one is the story of a naive youngster with an ailing parent or parental figure trying to find his place in the world. The cuteness of Marcel Duchamp with shoes on is very Gump-like.
Okay.
The very Gump-like worldview of Marcel Duchamp with shoes on.
Good to know.
Is going to be my fourth one. And then I am going to throw it on here. He becomes a shrimp poke captain. We might as well throw in Captain Phillips.
Captain Phillips, all right. I even referenced it earlier with the ending and the really good acting at the end of the movie by Tom Hanks.
Yep, there you go.
I'm the captain now.
And that's fine, but if we decide we should have a sixth, I have a couple more I can add.
Right. Well, I only have six on my list, so. My first one. Sometimes people call this... Forrest Gump is a donkey. Alhazar and Balthazar. It's about a donkey that gets passed from person to person. You're just seeing the world through the donkey's eyes. There's a very obvious connection. We could go next after that if we wanted to.
Go more. EO, right?
Yes, yeah. I don't know much about EO except that it's a donkey movie.
It's a donkey.
Next one, referenced it earlier. I've never seen it, but this is the darker side of the After Effects of War. This is born on the 4th of July.
Yep.
I think that definitely, I mean, that came out just a couple years before this, but you know, Lieutenant Dan character definitely seems based on the real life person, if not the character from Born on the 4th of July, because I do think Born on the 4th of July is based on a true story.
It is.
Another Robert Zemeckis film, and it's What Lies Beneath. Yep. So an older couple, or I guess they're not older, they're like middle-aged couple in that, out of Lake. It's supposed to be very Hitchcockian. I haven't seen it since it first came out. Robin Wright, we didn't talk a ton about her. We talked about Jenny. We didn't talk a lot about her performance, but Princess Bride. Yeah. She's you know, an adventure through life. And, you know, I think there's some connections. I also think that Inigo Montoya looks kind of like Gary Sinise when he has the long hair.
A little, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's four. And then my last one, a movie with Tom Hanks and Sally Field. It's about a stand-up comedian. It's not Chris Rock. It is called Punchline. I've never seen Punchline.
Tom Hanks, blind spot for you. Nice. I honestly thought one of us was going to say That Thing You Do. I mean, that's one of my honorable mentions. I know you love that movie. Sully, also in my mentions. World According to Garp, I thought about. I thought that was a really strong connection. I just don't know enough about that movie. Also, there's obviously the made for TV of Mice and Men, where, you know, with Gary Sinise and John Malkovich. Gary Sinise is also prominent in both Ransom and The Stand from the 90s, which I put on my short list. Sling Blade, I also thought about. Thornton with John Ritter. Elvis, obviously, was an honorable mention. A Man Called Otto was an honorable mention.
I thought about that. It's just not streaming. That was the only
thing. Yeah, unfortunately, I looked. Hearts in Atlantis is another one that I thought about. About a family who takes in people at their boarding house and how that person affects their lives going forward. Let's see. Anything else? No, go for it. What else you got?
I just had Deer Hunter. That's the only one Deer Hunter suggested.
Yeah.
And I know you... I thought that was going to come up because you brought it up.
Yeah, if I was going to do a sixth, it wouldn't have been my sixth.
Yeah. And I also wrote down the line crooked as a politician, and I was thinking about like a Nixon movie or something crooked. Yeah. But like, I feel like there's not any Nixon movies like I haven't watched recently that I was really down. I mean, Dick might be one.
And it's not enough there for All the President's Men, unfortunately.
There is some cast connections, I think, to All the President's Men I saw. But yeah, I just didn't think it was super strong.
So. Cool. Let's take it from the top. All right. We have Being There, Castaway, Good Morning Vietnam, P.S. I Love You, The Banshees of Inisherin, Chariots of Fire, A Beautiful Mind, Saving Private Ryan, Big Fish, Zelig, Pulp Fiction, The Butler, Dangerous Minds, Dick, Full Metal Jacket, Apollo 13, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, Captain Phillips, Balthazar, Born on the 4th of July, What Lies Beneath, The Princess Bride, and Punchline. Zachary, you get to go first.
Oh, man. All right. I'm going to take off your list first. I'm going to take Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. It's nominated for an Academy Award. Maybe it'll win Best Animated. Best
Animated Film.
And if you say it's a good connection, I will trust your judgment.
Yep, I think it's a great connection. Well, I will go ahead and take my one from your list first then as well. And I will pick... This is tough. Let's see. What do I want to do here? Balthazar? No. So stupid. All right. The Princess Bride is a good cast connection, but there's not much else there. I think I'll go with What Lies Beneath.
Okay.
I think we haven't done that, and you haven't seen it in forever. I haven't seen it since it came out.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I really remember about it is Michelle Pfeiffer and Harrison Ford.
Two actors who are in the MCU.
Yep.
I was thinking it's kind of amazing that like Hanks has not been in any like major comic book or Star Wars franchise. You know, like no Star Wars, no Disney, no DC. Like it's kind of crazy he stayed completely away from all those major franchises.
There you go.
All right. And I do think it's funny that you said no Princess Bride because it's just a cast connection, not enough. But then you took What Lies Beneath, which is just a director connection.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair enough.
I'm just calling you out before somebody else does.
Yeah, that's fine. I just didn't feel like doing the Princess Bride.
All right. Well, it is Oscars week.
It is Oscars week.
So I feel like there's a couple listener connections that make a lot of sense with that in mind. That's Banshees of Inisherin, Saving Private Ryan, or Pulp Fiction. And I really like some of the connections to Banshees of Inisherin.
I kind of did.
But I also, like, I think
Saving Private Ryan. You also don't want to rewatch that movie yet.
Yeah.
I mean,
I just would be interested in watching it. I do kind of want to rewatch a couple other movies that are nominated for Best Picture this week. And we would be watching it after the Oscars, so I would know how it did in the Oscars. After,
yeah, like, that could affect,
But I really like those suggestions. Like, I think, like, Olin did a very good job with connections.
Oh, yeah, for sure. There's a lot of really good stuff here, both from Olin and Stefan and Alex. Everybody said they had good connections.
Yeah, I like James and Alex. Like,
yeah.
All right, I'm going to give the nod to Banshees of Inisherin only because Mac didn't write anything to go along with Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, it would just be the debate that we had at the top of the pod about which is better.
True.
Basically, it's the Best Picture loser to Forrest Gump. Yeah. There aren't any real direct connections.
Right. And aside if Banshees of Inisherin wins over Everything Everywhere All at Once, or if Fabelmans went over Everything Everywhere All at Once, we can kind of have that discussion of, like, is this Pulp Fiction again? Right. So, yeah, I will put Banshees on my list. Or, you know, I'll make that my pick.
I'm going to pick a movie we've been circling around for several weeks now. I think it'd be fun to revisit this movie. It had Oscar buzz. It was nominated for a few Oscars. I'm going to take Big Fish. I mean, we've been circling around Big Fish for weeks now.
We have. And I don't think it's actually made the finals at all.
It made the finals once.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So we have Marcel the Shell, What Lies Beneath, Banshees of Inisherin, and Big Fish. Marcel the Shell, I believe, is not streaming for free, but it is rentable.
Okay, hang on just a second. Let me get it up. This is my new favorite game that we have, which is Brendan Guesses the Streaming Service. Shout out to all the people who called us out on not saying Titanic was in theaters last week when we were talking about
shit. Yeah,
the ability to see it.
Yep. Like three different people DM'd me to be like, hey, moron.
Yeah.
All right. Theaters.
So we'll start with Marcel the Shell. Where is that streaming?
Nowhere for free yet, I don't believe. I think it's just on Amazon Prime as a rental.
It is on Showtime.
Oh, which we have the Showtime problem right now.
Yeah, so it's on Showtime, and it's not even rentable, it's buyable. It's $12.99.
Did I buy Marcel the Shell? Maybe I bought Marcel the Shell then.
Yeah, I don't know. It does not appear that it is rentable, so I feel like that's disqualifying.
Okay, do you want to pick something else then from my list?
No, that's just disqualifying.
Are you sure? Okay, then it's out. What Lies Beneath is probably on, like, Poppy Peacock.
Poppy Peacock. That does seem like a Peacock movie.
Sounds like a Poppy. HBO Max, nice. Yeah. Well, then it goes with another HBO Max movie in Banshees.
Correct.
Banshees is on the Max.
That's an easy one.
Fish is on... Is that a Paramount flick? It might be a Paramount flick. I'm going to say Paramount.
No, that is rentable.
Okay. So are we taking...
Only $2.99, though, but
rentable. Now. So are we taking Big Fish out then?
I think we stick with the two HBO Max features.
Wow. So are we doing a movie that had Oscar buzz and got no nominations? Or Banshees of Inisherin, which you're not that excited to revisit?
Yeah, I mean, it could be an interesting discussion about if I don't like it still. And maybe, who knows, maybe on a second watch I like it better. I just thought it was not my tempo.
Not your tempo.
Yeah, What Lies Beneath, Robert Zemeckis' film. He was the perfect husband until one mistake followed them home, is the log line for that movie. Harrison Ford and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, I think it falls into, like, the sexy thriller type thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Can we audible and pick four other movies?
I don't know. I mean... I'm kind of good with Banshees, to be honest.
All right, let's do it then.
I think it's timely. Yeah, I think it's timely. I think there's really good connections there. We can debate if the... What is the Colin Farrell character's name in that?
Podrig. Yeah.
Yeah. If he is more Forrest Gump or if the Bear Keegan character is more Forrest Gump.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, I don't know if that's maybe a problematic discussion to have.
This will be the third time I've seen this movie this year. This will be fantastic.
You're how many times?
Third.
Third time, all right.
I am happy to rewatch it. I love this movie. I won't have to take a lot of notes. So that's good.
Yeah, I was not a fan my first time, but
I know
everybody else likes it. So I feel like
not everybody, but yeah,
that's true. Not everybody. All right, Banshees of Inisherin. It is for next week. Good job, Olin. That's a point for you. I feel like that's a couple points for Olin recently.
Yep, I like it. I'm here for it.
You don't have an updated scoreboard, do you? Where we are?
I do, actually, since we are now 10 weeks into the season, We have, let's see. So I have 1 point, one single solitary point.
Nice.
You have 4 points, and our listeners have 5. So once again, podcast of the people.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't add, I didn't add Curious Case of Benjamin Button to our Letterbox list. Cause I'm like, I don't see it on, I'm like, I only see 8 movies. That's cause I forgot to add it. Okay. So 10. Yeah. Cool. Podcast of the people. Very good. How many points did I have again?
4.
4 points.
Use the fours.
Nice. All right. I'm doing pretty well then. 40% of our movies have been my suggestion. I like it. All right. Well, next week we'll be talking about The Banshees of Inisherin. It's kind of fun because we have no idea
how this movie is going to do the Oscars. I'm very excited, actually. Yeah, it's like a blind thing where we don't know and we'll get to react to how it did, if it wins anything at the Oscars.
Right.
We might be having an Irish wake for Banshees of Inisherin next week.
Oh, true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brendan Gleeson, Colin Farrell, Barry Keoghan, and
I had it until you asked me. Carrie Condon.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yes. We'll see. Maybe my mind will be changed on it. Maybe Brendan's mind will be. Maybe on the third watch, he's like, this movie sucks. Why am I liking
this movie? Wish. Yeah. All right. Get your listener scores in. Get your feedback in. I'm really excited for us to tackle Banshees of Inisherin. Also, we're rolling closer to St. Patrick's Day, Zach. So
true. Yeah,
we're only 10 days away from St. Patrick's Day, and here we are doing St. Patrick's Day.
I mean, it's going to be St. Patrick's Day week next week, because St. Patrick's Day is next Friday. St. Patrick's
Day week. It is the luck of the Irish that we are doing Banshees of Inisherin next week.
Really the luck of the Irish, the luck of the Irishman Olin.
There you go. Exactly. What else are you excited for this week, Zach?
Oh, well, there's a lot of basketball starting. The conference tournaments are starting this week. So I'll be watching a lot of basketball. Hopefully I'll be watching a lot of basketball this weekend. Hopefully Michigan State makes a run this weekend. And movie wise, I still need to watch Double Indemnity for Criterion. I just didn't get around to my Criterion this week.
Really good.
So I need to do that. And I was planning on rewatching Everything Everywhere All at Once in Tar before the Oscars, because I've seen all the Best Picture nominees and I would like to see a couple others like Marcel Michel and The Whale. That's a big time investment. So yes, but I am going to at least, you know, Tar kind of falls into that same category as Banshees of Inisherin, as like a movie everybody loved that was nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah.
Or almost everybody loved. And it did not work for me at all. So I wanted to give that one another shot as well.
Fair enough.
So how about you?
A few things. I mean, I'm excited for the Oscars, obviously, as we talked about. I'm excited to go see Creed 3 this weekend. I'm excited for another episode of The Mandalorian, Zach. Mandalorian has premiered. Episode 2 will be tomorrow morning. And you can check me out at Post Show Recaps with Rich and LaTanya every week, giving you the feedback after Mike and Rich have their instant reaction podcast over at Post Show Recaps. Been a really good time so far. Rich and I played a game this past week on the Mando Feedback Pod called Mando or Nando. Just a little tease. I won't tell you what that means.
Is it Mandalorian characters or Nando's sauce names?
It's very close. But I thought of it the other night, and I said, they said, you need to come up with a game. And I said, hang on a second. Let me think of something. And they came up with Nando or Mando. So there you go.
I like that. I have not yet listened to it. I will be. It's just I have all these other Mandalorian podcasts I got to get to before tomorrow morning. I just feel like I'm swimming in podcasts right now.
Nice.
So we're making people swim in podcasts longer because we'll keep talking. I have a game for you, but I feel like it's like it would only work in a video format. And that's like Star Wars Alien Pictionary, where you have to describe to each other like to draw or like I guess that's not really how Pictionary works. Works that like you would draw and then Rich has to guess who it is, but it really only works for video podcasts. I don't know if it'll work on audio. We will be watching the Banshees of Inisherin next week. Very excited to get to this. I think it would have been better if it would have been like the first watch and I could have my instant reaction.
Kind of wish we were doing this in person. Like this would be a great
way that would be a good person. Well, you can fly out here if you want. You can come out here for my birthday. True.
Yeah. Big Ten weekend, Bo.
Right. There you go. But yeah, no, we're not. We're just doing it. Also, you know, speaking of movies that are up for Best Picture, Brennan and I, as we said, we were on Potion Recaps talking about Elvis last week. So if you've watched Elvis, we definitely kind of hate on that movie a little bit. I mean, not terribly, but definitely more than we do
a
lot.
We had fun. We had a good time talking about Elvis. Yeah.
And just another one that I will shout out that I listened to is friend of the podcast, John G, co-host of There Will Be Pod. He did All Quiet on the Western Front last week. Great. And I thought that podcast was really good, too. Yeah, so if you've seen All Quiet, check out John G's pod, because good for him.
Friend of the pod.
Over on Post-Show Recaps, which is also where you can catch Brendan talking about Mando. So, yeah, friend of the Padres. Yeah, exactly. Big Tony Scott fan, that guy.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, that's it. We'll see you next week for Banshees of Inisherin. Maybe the 2023 Best Pitcher winner. Maybe the 2023 Best Pitcher loser. To be determined.
Back in hell.
I mean, it would only be feckin' hell if they lose, right? If they win, it'd be feckin' hell. Yeah, right, yeah. Right.
What's going on with you and me, feckin' Oscar?
All right. Should we get to some of these, like, real negative feedback Letterboxd reviews on Forrest
Gump? Have to.
I feel like they bring up some good points. Yeah, so these are the top reviews on Letterboxd, of course. Tent and Quarantino, which is a fitting one for somebody who hated this movie, a big Quentin Tarantino fan, says, move over, Triumph of the Will. We got a new, fresh new load of propaganda for a movie that acts almost like a travelogue for how awesome America is. Don't you think it's odd that the story centers around your average American, some random low-intelligence nobody? The theme of this movie is simple. Do as you're told. That's all Forrest does in the whole movie, and he ends up a famous millionaire entrepreneur, war hero, athlete, and pop culture icon. But Jenny, on the other hand, does the exact opposite, questions the status quo at every turn, stands up for what she believes in all throughout the movie, and ends up a depressed abuse victim with broken homes, two broken homes and AIDS. Subtle. Yeah. So don't bother learning anything or educating yourself. Your country has it all covered. And if you obey, your life will be grand. As the late, great Bill Hicks once said, go back to bed, America. Your government is in control. Fuck that. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but this movie stank regardless.
It's fair. You know what? There's some fair criticism in there, but that is the cynical of cynical views on this movie, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's not wrong. It's just really cynical.
It's a very different way of looking at it. Yeah, it's the opposite of the way this movie wants you to look at it.
Exactly.
But I think, the treatment of Jenny, that Jenny does, she does goes against the grain, and her result is that she gets AIDS, and Forrest, on the other hand, is, because a millionaire, because he's just, does what he's told.
Yeah.
All right. One more that was a bad review, and then we'll do a 5-star to close things out. This is like some weird conservative fantasy. If watching this served any good purpose, it is the possible vital reminder that the Clinton era it was not as progressive as many of us would like to remember, that the latter half of the 20th century in America, throughout the eyes of the reactionary, nearly 50 years of social tumult regarded as just a brief phase of unrest before everything returns to quote-unquote normal. The Vietnam War, Black Panthers, and social justice activists regarded as a big joke. Jenny's character is subtly demonized. Every decision she makes is the wrong one, and she doesn't find happiness until she bends to Forrest's will. Forrest is always right, even though he does nothing but observe. So
same thing the last guy said a little bit. Yeah, that's. I mean, they're not wrong. That's the thing. They're not wrong. Yeah, you just have to. Do you take the movie for what it is, or do you look for that deeper meaning? And I choose to be Forrest Gump about it. And look at the movie for what it is.
You're not the most cynical person, so
I'm not the most cynical person.
All right, we're gonna close out with a 4.5-star, and this one would have been a good movie map. And it is from Nicole Kubrick, and she says, nothing good comes from going online. You get online and they hated Forrest Gump, freaking best movie ever. That's a quote from Ray Romano in The Big Sick.
Yes. Movie map. Yep.
Yes.
So, you go nice online job. And they hate nice it job, Nicole Kubrick. Forgot about that. I knew there was a Big Sick connection, but I couldn't remember what it was.
Yeah.
That is the best, might be the best line in Big Sick too.
Yeah. I do vividly remember that. So yeah, Ray Romano, really, big fan of this
movie. Go online. They hate it for us.
Ray Romano's character. Yeah. So
fantastic.
All right. Well, Banshees of Inisherin next week on HBO Max. See everybody then.